Hi, I'm Rika Brandon with Building Gurus. I'm so excited to bring you our latest guru webinar with Scott Erickson of Wheelhouse 2020. If you've been in the building product space at all, particularly in the pro sales space, you've probably heard of Scott. He's very well known and very well respected across the industry. What they've done at Wheelhouse 2020 is combine the power of marketing and sales and getting them to integrate and work together, which, as we all know in the industry, can be a bit of a challenge because often they're competing for time, resources, and of course, budget. So I love what Wheelhouse 2020 has done, and they just continue to do cool, innovative things across the industry. And I'm so excited and so just stoked, actually, that Scott agreed to share this information with you, particularly because I had several clients just in the last month basically ask me about exactly how you could do this. Like, how do I really know if my sales reps are doing a good job? You know, they talk a good game, but it's hard because, you know, obviously people aren't always sharing what their sales team is doing with their competitors. And I am great at finding salespeople and sales managers, but I am not a salesperson at heart. I'm not a sales manager and I'm not a sales consultant. So he didn't know what to tell them. And now I'm super stoked because I'm going to be able to share this with them and they're going to be able to hear it from a master. So I'm very excited to introduce Scott. Scott is joining me remotely today. So in just a few seconds here, I'm going to turn off my video and I'm going to let Scott introduce himself because, frankly, I think it's often better when we introduce ourselves versus me saying something kind of stilted and awkward. And frankly, Scott's awesome and he's going to be great at introducing himself and just dropping knowledge on you like crazy. So without further ado, I'm very excited to introduce Scott Erickson of Wheelhouse 2020.
Thank you very much, Rick. That was a humbling introduction. I don't know that it's deserved, but I very much appreciate it. My name is Scott Erickson, and I own a company called Wheelhouse 2020 with my business partner, Jennifer Swick. And Jennifer and I worked together for Parr Lumber Company for 17 years. The last 10 years were on the executive leadership team before founding Wheelhouse 2020 in 2010. And Jennifer was the director of marketing and I was the regional sales manager. And on that executive leadership team, we had a lot of challenges. And one of the most significant challenges that we came up against early in our career was fighting over budgets. And in most organizations, the marketing and the sales are typically in silos. I wanted more budgets for hats and pencils, golf tournaments, fishing trips, those kinds of things for the salespeople. And Jennifer wanted to use that budget for company brand awareness, new customer segment development, product promotion, you know, silly stuff like that. And so what we discovered was that the most effective programs that the company put together actually happened when we integrated the sales and the marketing, because sales needs marketing to provide a unique competitive advantage for the salespeople. And sales relies on, and marketing relies on that sales to create buy-in and to produce results for the campaigns. So in Wheelhouse 2020, we won't create a marketing campaign without some kind of sales component. So that's where you actually get your return on your investment or your ROI for marketing. So the goal for today is to talk about something that we're passionate about in our organization and with our clients. It's first to just separate the common perceptions that our companies and our salespeople have from reality, that we base our day-to-day decisions on a lot of these things that may be not true. And the other thing we want to do today is identify some of those behaviors that are actually holding our sales teams back from increasing revenue and increasing profitability. Third, we want to understand what our customers truly think of our business performance. Do you know that? Have you asked your customers? Have you had conversations? And we're not talking about, do you agree, strongly agree, somewhat agree, never agree, those kinds of survey monkeys. We're talking about true conversations with our clients. And then finally, we want to be able to use this information for something that is going to be valuable to the organization. And that's to begin designing and executing a comprehensive sales program, a sales training program that will be effective in the field. So some of the common perceptions that I've experienced in now 20 something years in the building industry is salespeople telling me that I don't have enough time. I don't have enough time for prospecting. I don't have enough time to follow up. I really can't get that estimate back until the end of next week because we're doing, and I get that. It's a hot kitchen in a sales lumber material, building material dealers organization. And so they may perceive that they don't have enough time to do all of these things. They also have a perception that the competition is selling below our cost. I hear that from salespeople all the time. Well, you know, we didn't get this job because they're selling the materials lower than we can even buy it. And is that true? Are those true perceptions? And they may be in the mind of the salesperson, and this is what's really important to understand, is that in the mind of the salesperson, they may absolutely believe that they do not have enough time. They do not, that the competition is selling below their cost. Or I've heard, well, we're going to get the next house, or the next community, or the next subdivision. We didn't get this one, but we'll get the next one. And they may very well believe that. They're listening to the customers who are genuinely interested in working with them. The project is right next to our competitor. The company had a bad experience with us years ago. Our credit department won't let us sell them. We lost the job, but it's okay because they're a high maintenance or they're a low margin account anyway. Or they're never going to leave the competition because the relationship goes back for years. So now determining whether or not those are true valid objections, or are those just perceptions that a salesperson is using to justify their behaviors, because as long as they believe that, then they don't have to focus on themselves, right, or the organization. So they can use these as maybe a crutch. And so we want to try to break that down. And so why is that so important? Well, separating perception from reality, first, it confirms that the customer experience that you want and that they want meets your expectations. Are you actually meeting their expectations or even exceeding their expectations in the experience? It also illuminates bottlenecks in the sales process. By separating those different aspects of the salesperson's information from the customer's true experience, we can really find out where do we have a bottleneck in our sales process. It evaluates how good salespeople are at winning business. And that's something that we help our clients with all the time. We get asked a lot, how can we increase our closure rate, or how can we convert those customers? We're bidding a lot of jobs, but we're not getting a lot of jobs. So how can we improve that or increase that capture rate? It also creates a foundation for sales strategy. And when you're starting to set with your leadership team and a sales strategy for a quarter, for a year, how are you basing that foundation and that plan if you don't understand truly what your customers are experiencing and what your salespeople are projecting in the marketplace? So this helps you create a foundation for that. It also allows you to design a sales training that is valuable. And that is, there's a lot of sales training programs out there, and some of them are very, very good, and some of them are very, very average, without saying negative. But so this allows you to target specific sales behaviors, and I'll show you how we do that in our organization. And two of the most important things in increasing sales is establishing accountability, exposing any kind of excuses or perceptions, and then finally creating that buy-in and credibility with salespeople. Because you know there's a couple of different types of salespeople that go to sales training. There are those that feel like prisoners and those that feel like vacationers. You know, I'm gonna go to the sales training so I don't have to be in the office, or I'm gonna go to the sales training because they're making me. But if we can create a sales training program that actually has value for the salespeople and they buy into it and start to believe it, then it will become behaviors and it will become something that is converted in the field to actual sales. So the first question I'd like to ask you as an audience, are you really better than your competition? And think about that for a second. We already have established that, in my opinion, I don't think that your competitors are selling the exact same products below your cost every single time. So are you doing the things that are necessary beyond price to be better than your competition? And we need to be able to communicate what sets us apart. And I don't think that salespeople or organizations do that very well. There's not a lot of competitive advantage in windows, wood, building materials. We buy from the same distributors, we buy from the same manufacturers. So if a salesperson can't effectively communicate what differentiates him or herself or the company, then it's always going to come down to price. And in our research, very few salespeople communicate anything other than features and price. Your salespeople bring it up, they bring up price most often. They'll bring it up even before your customers. And it's typically the lowest price. Well, if they ask about a bid, a project, well, yeah, we have this product and the cheapest product is this, or the least expensive, or the best way to go to save you money, and they'll automatically go to the lowest price if they don't have something else to talk about. So just for a minute, think about what sets your company apart, and then answer the following question. Based on all the alternatives in your area available to builders, why would they choose you? So I'm betting you have some version of, it's our commitment to quality, it's our exceptional service, it's our employees, their experience or their knowledge. And I've also heard in my experience, it's our location, it's our purchasing power, we buy better. It's our relationships with our builders. So if you're using those as your competitive advantage, the trucks, locations, people experience, all of those kinds of things, and you believe that that's your competitive advantage in those areas, unfortunately, so does your competition. Because we do a lot of secret shopping, we talk to a lot of different companies, and almost every company believes they have an advantage in quality service and in their employees. And if it's in everyone's advantage, then it's really no one's advantage. And I'm going to show you in the next few slides the danger of relying on quality service and experience for your or employees for your competitive advantage. For our clients, secret shops and builder conversations, and I don't like the term surveys, although I'll use it, builder conversations have been two of the most effective tools in evaluating salespeople and separating perception from reality, while at the same time identifying your competitive advantage or the lack thereof. So let's talk about the secret shops just for a minute. Service quality, employees, experience are the most common benefits in the entire industry, maybe even the entire world, I don't know. But let's assume for a minute that your company is better than the competition on all three of those. But you know what? Very few salespeople even use those in a conversation. Most often they go straight to feature and straight to price. Occasionally a product benefit might sneak into the conversation, but that's pretty rare. So when you're looking at a secret shop, what we want to accomplish with that is really benchmarking your group, creating those measurements and those metrics. Because the first part of a true talented sales organization is having visibility. And if you don't have measurements and metrics, then you're not going to have anything to measure, or you're not going to have any visibility. The other thing that a secret shop can accomplish for your organization is it identifies areas where the team is underperforming. And that's how you target your training. Now our training can be focused on a particular sales process or part of the sales process, rather than a 4-hour or 8-hour generic sales training. Let's do this one time and then everybody walks out and leaves. Now we can get very specific with our training, which I think is much more effective. It also identifies areas where the team is overperforming. We work with a lot of market leaders in each region of the country. We work all over the nation and in Canada, and we typically work with market leaders, and there are a lot of areas that they do much better than their competition. Those are the things that we want to market. Those are the things that we want to promote. Those are the things that go into your competitive advantage and that your salespeople should be communicating. And then finally, when you're doing that training, it really helps to create buy-in from the salespeople. Eliminate those excuses. And when they hear themselves speaking in a conversation about sales, and then they hear their competitors, now we've really eliminated any kind of excuses, and they start to get buy-in. They start to go, oh my gosh, that's exactly what I, even if it isn't them, it's someone else in the organization, they think That's exactly what I would say. That's what I would sound like. Do I really sound like that when I'm talking to a customer? So we start to get accountability in our training. These are some of the categories that we measure when we do them. Now, I would suggest that each organization has specific things that are unique to their company, their organization, and their market. So I would recommend customizing this with your leadership team and identifying the behaviors that you want the salespeople to effectively represent. These are just the ones that I feel are important that we've found work really well. In the greeting, we want to establish enthusiasm. We want their personality to come out. We want there to be consistency between the locations or between the salespeople. Then the communications section is really important. We have competency in there, but the two categories that I'm going to key on are extra mile and owning the relationship. And so we'll talk about those because I think those two things really go to conversion of sales from a relationship to a sale, to dollars in the balance sheet. And then sales skills, probably the hardest and most difficult section. And I'm a pretty tough critic when it comes to evaluating salespeople. I think they should be able to do all of these things, and I think they should do it often. However, very few do, and you'll see that from our report. So I'm going to show you just a couple of examples from our previous work that will help illustrate how we can separate perception from reality with a sales team. So in this particular case, this is one we just did a year or so ago. The organization had four locations that we were measuring, our client. We also were comparing them to 21 different competitors in that marketplace. And we've averaged their four locations together. And you can see their scores. This is on a scale of 1 to 5. But when it comes to competency, the four locations averaged the exact same score as their 21 competitors. There wasn't a lot of difference in competency. And that's because in our industry, typically salespeople have been around for a while. They have a lot of experience. And we do a lot of vendor training. We rely on our vendors to do a lot of that product knowledge training, those Domino's pizza, lunch and learns, donuts in the morning, that kind of stuff. So to try to say that our people are more experienced or more knowledgeable really is not accurate. Because when we've measured all of the competitors in their location, just based on competency or experience, they come out very similar. It's same with the responsiveness, listening skills. There's not a lot of differentiation until you get down to extra mile mentality, which is a cultural issue for a company, and owning the relationship. And what I call owning the relationship is investing in the customer and asking for the sale. And salespeople don't do that very often. You can see here in this case, our client did do better than the competition. When we're on the right side of the screen and owning the relationship, they scored a 2.8 and their competition on average scored a 1.7. So they're outperforming the competition, but I think you would agree with me, a 2.8 out of 5 in that category would not be acceptable to almost any organization in the United States. So let's look at some of the sales skills, which are actually even a little more difficult to train, a little more difficult to execute. And you can see acting as a resource is one of the things that we measure. And acting as a resource is essentially your service. And you can see that they're very similar. Matter of fact, they're identical in this case. So the services that they provide or the resources they provide are almost identical in most cases. And this is consistent across all of the clients that we work with. They're very, very similar and close to their competition in services. So now those two competitive advantages so far that we've identified, employees and services, are not much different than our competition. When it comes down to now asking questions, offering solutions, add-on sales, which is asking about other products or suggesting or recommending other products in the same project, the sales skills are really lacking. And then you get down to follow-up, which I think is a key component of the sales process. We're really very low on a scale of 1 to 5. So what that tells me, though, is that we have a tremendous opportunity as a dealer to outperform our competition and differentiate ourselves, create a true competitive advantage in the marketplace. Just imagine if you could get your sales team to perform at a 5.0 level on add-on sales right there in the middle, and your competition is performing at a 1.2, now you've created quite a gap, quite a differentiation between your sales team and the experience that your customers are going to feel or have and what they're getting from the competition. So those are the key areas that I would take a look at. And this just helps, doing those secret shops really helps set or differentiate the perception or separate the perception from the reality. I don't think we've ever had in any of the locations, either our clients or a competition or a competitor's clients, I don't think we've ever had anyone score higher than a 3 on add-on sales, straight to price, or follow-up. So that's a true opportunity for these organizations who are training their salespeople. Builder, I mentioned here, it's called builder surveys, but I really call these builder conversations. And builder conversations accomplish a lot if you ask the right questions. If I asked you or your salespeople who your competition is, I'm certain they could tell me who they think it is. If I asked them why their customers buy from your competitors, most likely I would get the answer, well, it's because of price or the relationship. But what we found is that, in fact, your customers buy from your competitors because there's something lacking in your business. And there are many benefits to a customer conversation that can really help you build your plan and your competitive advantage. For example, builder conversations allow you to understand your business from the customer's perspective. It exposes hidden objections. They'll typically start out with, well, we buy from this company because we get a better price. But as we allow the conversation to go forward, and like I said, we don't use agree, strongly agree, somewhat agree. We actually have a conversation, and because of our experience in the industry, we can relate to their situations, and they recognize immediately that we understand the building material supply industry. So then they'll talk even more and more in depth about some of those hidden objections. Well, yeah, they are a little bit, the company we're using is a little bit less expensive, but what I really didn't like about the other company is that the salesperson wouldn't call me back, or that the credit department was hard to deal with, or that the deliveries were never on time. So we'll expose some of those hidden objections, and then now we can turn that back to our sales team through the training, and they can help overcome those objections. And then if it comes down to price, we may lose occasionally on price, but if we've uncovered and handled every single objection other than price, I would bet on a sales team's ability to convert that customer 9 out of 10 times. It also dispels myths about the customer's preferences. Well, this customer only buys cheap. They don't want any quality products at all. We just know from the customer's perspective that that is not true. But it's very easy for a salesperson to say, well, the reason I can't sell them is because our product is too high quality, or because our inventory is too high priced. That gives them an easy out. So this dispels those myths in the customer's preference. It also identifies who your competitors are and why your customers buy from them, which is something that every sales team and every organization should know. It identifies different product categories that are potential opportunities and why they're not buying them from you. I get that all the time, especially in this marketplace. We want to sell, this year our initiative is to sell more windows or more specialty products or more doors or trusses or whatever that may be. They've identified specific product categories and they tell the salespeople, hey, this year you're going to go out and sell more windows. But they don't understand why the customers are buying from the competition and why they're not already buying those products from you. So the salesperson gets met with objection after objection, and they don't convert any sales. And then we yell at them at the end of the quarter and say, hey, our sales haven't gone up. This was one of our initiatives. How come we didn't sell any more of this product? And the salespeople don't have another answer other than our price is too high. So it helps improve the operational process. You're going to hear a lot of information from those customer conversations. Most importantly, it really shows that you care about the customer and their opinion and their business. When we do these and we talk with these customers, they tell us all the time, I really appreciate that they care about this. I'm glad that they're asking. I'm glad that they're interested in understanding my business. So that's a really important benefit. Here's just an example of what some of the kind of information that we get back. You can see that opportunities for improvement with this other particular client, 31% of the time they did say price. And price, we're not going to eliminate it. I'm not going to try to convince a salesperson that price doesn't matter. Price does. Price always matters in the equation. But it's a salesperson's job to overcome the price objection. But if they don't have a competitive advantage or the company hasn't helped them with training, then they aren't going to be able to do that. But you can see that in a majority of the time, there were other reasons that they weren't buying from the client. It was product selection or inventory 13% of the time. 8% of the time, it was communication gaps, whether it was with the dispatch or delivery or it was with the salesperson. The door and trusses in this particular case, door and truss issues were the reason that they were not buying from them anymore, that they'd had a bad experience with those particular product categories. Then there was responsiveness, deliveries, new location, they wanted more customer leads or the relationship, maybe credit returns. Credit returns always come up as a challenge with every organization. Unless you have a process and a plan and you measure and really attack that, they're a big challenge for many companies. Here's another example that I wanted to show you where perception and reality were really different. We asked the managers, this is a completely different client, and we asked the managers of these two different stores. They have two different types of stores in their organization. One is in a high traffic retail, a lot of do-it-yourself, do-it-for-me type of customers. And the other one is a highly pro-contractor, production builder driven yard. And so we asked the high traffic retail yard manager on the right, we said, who's your biggest competitor in this marketplace? And he told us that his biggest competitor were the box stores for his retail customers. And so we went through the exercise of talking to his customers, we talked to his target customers, and we talked to people in that community about who they're using and why. And what we found out is that their biggest competitor was not the box store. It was the local independent dealer that was right down the street that was very similar to them. Because the customers said, if I can't find it from this client, I want to go to someone else who has the same specialty, the same knowledge, the same expertise who can help me. I don't want to go to, those customers don't want to go to a box store. They're box averse. That's what we use in our term, in our company is that type of customer. The box averse customer who will go there if they have to Home Depot or Lowe's, but doesn't necessarily want to go there. They're going to try to seek out your competitor, independent competitor first. And that was shocking to that manager. He said, wow, I would have had no idea that 42% of my customers or clients in this market were really looking at the independent dealer over the box store. Because all of his sales focus, all of his communication, and all of his marketing had been against the box store and not thinking about the other local lumberyard as a competitor. Now, exactly the opposite was true in the pro yard. We asked the pro yard, and he thought that his biggest competitor was the local lumberyard down the street. And when we talked to even his customers, his top customers, they when they couldn't buy from him or didn't buy from him, they typically went to the box store because it was more convenient, because there was a lower priced item, for whatever various reasons, but they had no desire to go to another lumberyard down the street. More often than not, they were going to the box store. So that helped us identify why are his current customers, when they're not buying from them, going to the box stores. And it really illuminated some issues in inventory. It illuminated some issues in operations, store hours, convenience. And so we can then start to attack those issues on a specific level. So you can see sometimes we're basing our marketing decisions, our business decisions, our sales decisions on perceptions that aren't just necessarily true. And that helps us, that hurts us when we're measuring those results and we're saying, why aren't these things happening? Why aren't we getting results from this? Why aren't we increasing our sales in a category? Why aren't we getting these customers back? Because we're targeting our sales and our marketing in the wrong direction. Here's another example, just store to store. One of the the things our clients have asked us is, or say that's important to them, is that the stores have a consistent experience from one to the other. Because customers talk. If I have a great experience at one store, I'm going to then go to another one, or I'm going to refer people to another location because of that. And you can see in the same organization, when we compare those two locations in experience, customer service, and pricing, there are differences that exist in those organizations. And then we can identify what those are and make those more consistent, helping that organization provide a better experience across the company in every location, and whether it be a different city or in a different side of town. We're trying to now become more consistent as a sales and marketing team for the customers. Another thing that we identify in these customer conversations is how much business are our customers doing with us? What percentage of their business is coming to our location? And if you ask salespeople, they will most likely tell you, oh, we're getting all of it. You know, we're getting 100% of it, or we're getting 80% of it, or we're getting 20% of it. They will give you a number that they feel might be right. But when we ask those customers, how much of your business are you giving to your primary supplier? And you'll notice that on the right, 23.8% are buying 75 to 100% for this particular company. And that's probably typical. About 25% of your customers are going to be extremely loyal. And they're going to be buying 75 to 100%. Whatever they can buy, they will. But there's a big segment that is 25 to 50 and 50 to 75% that we heard from the salespeople were buying 80 to 90% of their material from them. Then when we ask the customers, they're actually only buying 50 to 75 or 25 to 50. They've got other projects going on that the salespeople either aren't aware of, or that the salespeople are exaggerating to us as a leadership or organization group. So the goal in this is to really identify how much of the business are they doing with us, and how can we move those customers from the left side, which is 0 to 25%, to the 75 to 100%. And through those conversations, we can find out why they're buying from the competition, what products they're buying, why they're buying those products, what it would take for our organization to convert them in those other product categories or get more of their business, more of their subdivisions or houses or projects. And we can take those customers that are in the 25 and to 50 and move them to the 50 to 75, take the customers from 50 to 75 and try to get them into that 75 to 100% category. So there's another way that we're identifying and separating the perception from the reality. We think we're getting all of the business. What we really find out is that we're not. And here's why we're not. And then we can do something about it. So just to kind of summarize at the end here, these are five components that we've seen of successful sales teams. Once they've gone through this process and they've started to separate the perception from the reality, then they start to build their sales teams. And companies that have done that have a very strong competitive advantage message. So that's the first thing that they need to do. And if you don't have a strong competitive advantage, if you can't communicate it, or if your salespeople can't, you need to make that a priority. And you can utilize this this information to do that. And you can do this. I'm not advocating. I mean, we do this all the time, and we do it for lots of companies across the country. But you can do this on your own too. This is something that is, as long as your leadership team has a commitment and you have the resources, you can do these things together to create those competitive advantage messages that are so important to helping those salespeople overcome objections in the marketplace and stay away from price. The other thing that successful sales teams do, or organizations, is they really spend time on training and resources. They don't rely on vendors for your sales training. I had one of the clients that we were talking to, we were doing marketing stuff for them, and I said, so tell me about your training. Do you have a training program? And he said, yeah, absolutely. We have vendors come in once a month and have a lunch and learn, and they talk about their products. And I said, okay, so tell me about your sales training. I understand you have a product knowledge opportunity or resource, but are they getting sales training from that? And they're like, well, yeah, they tell them how to sell the product. I'm like, no, they don't. Have you listened to any of those vendors? Some of them, and I don't want to paint them all with the same brush. Some of them do supply some sales training in the mix of their features and benefits. But more often than not, they're just talking about their product. They're not telling you how to handle objections. They're not telling you how to overcome the competition's product or the competition in your marketplace. So if the organization, if your expectation is an effective sales force, then you have an obligation to provide the resources necessary. It starts with teaching the team to accurately and consistently communicate that competitive advantage that's going to benefit the customer. And then they must also be shown how to execute the organizational strategy and the entire sales process, how to open up a call, how to add on sales, how to follow up, how to handle objections, how to negotiate, how to close. Those are all standard sales training processes that are so important for a sales team. Three, they have visibility and they monitor it constantly. So the salespeople become comfortable in their ignorance. And I say that with true respect because I was a salesperson for years and I work with tons of salespeople, but they truly believe that they're doing everything possible. And most of the circumstances that happen are simply a condition of the market or the customer. They don't want us to check with their customers or know what they're doing. That's their power. They hold that inside. And it's incumbent on the organization or the sales manager to have real-time visibility over several forms of factual data. Without visibility, it's impossible to measure the success or enforce accountability, which is the next step. Whether you're on the counter or you're in the specialty showroom or in pro sales, you're hired and compensated to generate profits for the organization. That's the definition of a salesperson. By definition, you are being paid to generate sales and profits. So you're by that, if you're being paid and you're a professional to do that, you need to be held accountable. And you've been promoted to that occupation. These salespeople, they've been promoted to these occupations because of their personality, their communication skills, maybe their experience in the industry. And they've been identified and targeted as and tapped as those employees who are uniquely qualified to create and protect revenue. So it's not to say everyone's not responsible for sales in an organization, but salespeople are the ones that are going to be held accountable. So there has to be some accountability attached to the salespeople's results. And then finally, motivation. And motivation is necessary, and it needs to be part of your culture. It needs to be consistent. There's as many motivational tools as there are salespeople. However, telling a salesperson they have one more quarter to improve or they're going to be fired, that's not on the list. Instead of looking for new accounts, the employee is probably going to spend the next 3 months looking for another job. So I would recommend recognition, reward, compensation, but I'm not even talking about financial compensation. There's all different kinds of compensation, maybe a day off, or there's other things that you can do. My least favorite is financial or monetary. I really like competitions. I've created several competitions within organizations, store to store, salesperson to salesperson. Some of them are based on sales revenue and gross profit, but very few of them, but more often than not, they're based on the sales skills. Are they executing the sales skills in the market? Because the more repetitive they are in practicing those skills, the better that they're going to be at them. So recognition is very powerful. Matter of fact, when we do employees, we've done some employee surveys, and recognition is more comes up more often than financial compensation in importance to the salesperson. They would rather have recognition for their job or for their abilities or for the work that they do than even compensation. Compensation was number two after recognition. So all of these things, if you want to develop a successful sales team, these should be components in there. And all of the things that we talked about today, separating reality from perception. That's the substance. That's the foundation that you take that information and that data, and that's how you can develop this. So I really appreciate your time today. I've left some information here on the screen. If you'd like to get in touch with us, we can do that. If not, I would encourage you to do this on your own and certainly talk about it with your leadership team. It's important, and it will change the results in your organization very quickly. So thank you.
Good. Well, hey, Scott, that was amazing. Thank you so much. I do have a couple of questions that I thought of when you were talking. I took about 6 pages of notes, and it was awesome. But I had a couple of things I was wondering about. So if you have a couple more minutes, I'd love to just ask you a few questions. Do you have time for that? Or?
Absolutely. Just make them easy questions.
All right. You've got it. Well, I don't think they're going to be too hard, but if they are, you can probably make up the answer and I wouldn't know. So the first thing, I deal with both distributors and manufacturers, and I'm wondering what you've seen kind of forward-thinking or savvy manufacturers or one-step distributors do to really help their product sell. You know, like you said, it's a lot of product knowledge, but not a lot of sales training. But that is a huge challenge if you're selling through distribution, is that ultimately you're not the feet on the street. So if you have any ideas or insights on what manufacturers can do to support that distribution sales force, I'd love to hear it. And I know I have a couple of clients who would love to hear it too.
Oh, I'm so glad you asked. And I should have emphasized that a little bit more in the presentation. We work with a lot of manufacturers and distributors in the marketplace. And I'm going to break those down in two different pieces. First, the manufacturer. We do a lot of secret shops of dealers about the manufacturer's product. And because we want to see, are they promoting the manufacturer's product? Are they first? That's one of the things that we really are measuring. Two, can they communicate the features and benefits, warranty information, technical information? Can they communicate that effectively and accurately? And that's something that the manufacturers want to know, because when they're doing their training programs, if they're going to go into a specific dealer, they need to know what they need to train on. What's the most
important? And I mean, warranty issues. I mean, that's a huge problem, is that if it's not sold and they don't know how to install it correctly in some of those cases, it just leads to a different problem down the road.
You're absolutely right. And then the most important thing, I think, that we measure when we're working with manufacturers is, are they selling off? And so many times when the manufacturer has a conversation either with the leadership team of the dealer or a salesperson, they'll say, yeah, oh yeah, we love your product. It's great. Can you give us some marketing dollars? That would be awesome. And then when we do the secret shops, we find that the salespeople actually haven't changed their behavior. They are selling off of the manufacturer's product onto a competitive product. And all of those marketing dollars that the manufacturer puts into magazine, TV, digital, whatever it may be, are going away when the customer comes in. They do that because they want to drive the customers into the dealer's stores, right? And so when they come into the dealer's stores or they call on the phone, the dealer then sells off. All of those marketing dollars are wasted. So we want to identify that. And we don't use that information to roll up a newspaper and beat them with it. We use it as okay, we know these dealers are selling off. What can we do to get them more on board without hurting the relationship? But is it a training issue? Is it an educational issue? Is it an inventory issue? And we can identify those. So that's with the manufacturers. Now with the distributors, I think the distributors in the channel have a huge missed opportunity to become a sales partner with the dealers. And they typically see themselves as I move product from one place to another and I do it really efficiently and I do it really effectively. Mm-hmm. But I think there's a great opportunity for distributors to become a sales partner with these dealers in between the manufacturer and the dealer. But a lot of them don't see themselves in that role.
Right. I think you're right. I think there's a huge opportunity there that really helps everybody involved. I apologize if it threw you off when I turned my video off in the middle of that, but I just realized I was bobbing my head like a bobblehead and thought nobody needs to see that in the corner of their screen.
That was fine.
Yeah. So I think it's awesome. And I do think, you know, exactly, there's a huge opportunity there. And, you know, I think smart and savvy companies will, you know, think ahead and do it. You know, not everybody will, obviously, but that's how we get leaders in the industry, right?
Correct.
And then is there any kind of percentage or rule of thumb, you know, of like sales revenue to spend on sales training or anything like that? Is there any ballpark or not? I don't actually know. I'm just curious.
I think there's, it's going to be different for every organization because they're set up so differently. Some have outside sales. Some don't have a lot of outside sales. Some have, they just run their sales team from inside a location. So some of them have multiple locations and they have to take people and travel. So the costs are really hard. And in our industry, we spend very little as a percentage on marketing and sales. And I get that. I mean, I went over a P&L every single month for 17 years. So I was watching those percentages and those numbers very carefully. But I think as an industry, we allocate very little to sales and marketing. I think it's more than it's money, it's time. And you don't have to spend a lot of money to train salespeople, but you do have to have a commitment to it. And you do have to have the right tools and materials, and it has to be consistent, and it has to be ongoing, and it has to be something that they recognize is important. And if you don't put an emphasis on it and make it important, meaning that you do a training once a year, they're not going to see that as important either. So I don't think the budget is as important as the commitment.
You know what? I totally agree. That's awesome. And you perfectly set me up for my last question. Are there any kind of key metrics or key performance indicators of the sales rep that you would encourage these sales managers or leaders to really pay attention to? You know, obviously it depends on the industry. In recruiting, we have our ratios, you know, we know all of that stuff because recruiting is much closer to sales than almost anything else, certainly more close to sales than HR if you're doing it right. But is there anything that you found that they can really move the needle on if they pay attention to these three or five things? Or is it really kind of subjective based on the market and the company and all that stuff?
There are three things that an organization can do tomorrow that will affect their revenue in the short term. The first one is responding quickly. If salespeople would respond immediately to every single quote or as many quotes as possible and turn those around quickly, customers make a decision based on the urgency that the salesperson has or the ownership that they're taking of that sale and responding to their request, whether it's a phone call, an email, a quote, an estimate, anything like that. If you respond quickly, you're going to have an upper hand on the other salespeople that you're competing against because most don't. The other thing, the second thing that they can do is really promote the other products in the organization. Ask questions. What other products are you using? What are you not using? Why are you not using those? Can I have an opportunity to add on sales? So that's the second thing that they could do. And then the third thing that I think is probably the most important is follow-up. Whether it's counter salespeople, whether it's outside salespeople, we typically will do an estimate for someone and we'll spend a lot of time doing a takeoff and an estimate. And then we may not even follow up with them in an email or in a phone call or as in a visit. As consistently. Now we may do it in one or two times for one or two estimates, but do we do that consistently with every estimate and with every job that we have the opportunity to sell? And follow-up will increase your closing ratio dramatically. So those three things, if you just focused on those, you would, you know, the handling objections, the negotiation, the closing, all of those kinds of things are important and need to be developed and refined, but those three things will change your conversion ratio quickly.
That's awesome. Well, Scott, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to talk with us today. I greatly appreciate it. I know that everybody who's listened also is, you know, probably scribbling notes or making plans in their mind about how they can put it into action. Again, if you guys want to find out what you could do better or how to integrate your marketing and sales and actually maximize the results from your investment, go ahead and reach out to Scott. He's a great guy. He'd be happy to talk with you and let you know a little bit about how they can help you achieve those big goals you have for your business. But thanks so much. Again, I'm Rica Brandon with Building Gurus, and we are a recruiting firm that works exclusively with building product manufacturers and distributors. All right. Thanks so much for your time, everyone. I appreciate it. Thanks so much, Scott.
Thank you, Rica.